cocked, locked, and ready to rock, Doc. Yes, I am. In fact, I'm psyched up and I'm mic'd up. Hi, folks. John Zombro here with the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, episode number 248 today. Thanks for being with me. Thank you for being a part of this community where we embody athletic fitness and athletic longevity. So, how to start today's show? Wow. There are a lot of things going through my mind, and I've actually got a small list here in front of me, so I'll get to that. You know, if you are enjoying the podcast and you'd like to support it, you can make a donation at thelifetimeathlete.com, and that's certainly much appreciated if you feel inclined to do that, but I would tell you this. Don't do that unless you've listened to a lot of episodes, read a lot of articles, and also watched a number of the YouTube videos that are available. There are hundreds of these things, and I really think that they can make a difference for you, and I certainly hope that. If you've done that and you want to support, go right ahead. But in reality, I think what you might really want to consider doing is joining the Training Tribe, T2. It's our greatest community that we have among the items that happen here at the Lifetime Athlete. The Training Tribe is an online year-round training team that's based on an annual training plan. We embody and develop and maintain the five capacities of human performance, which are strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. You can put those in any order. We blend and balance those in what we do with our workouts, and we have just an inclusive community that is filled with wonderful people around the country who want to do more than just get a workout plan. They want to develop this athletic fitness and maintain it through their lifespan. And we're really having some great success doing that. It's great fun for me as well. So I'd recommend that. I would say if you really identify and resonate with the things that are going on here, by all means, give that some consideration. Another thing you can do is grab any number of coaching consultations. If you need help with your home gym, need to rework your training program, got to get rid of pain, want to have your movement analyzed, any of those things are good, as well as ongoing training subscriptions. If you want a full-time coach to help you with your sporting goals, and especially that's true if it is in body composition, or the triathlon, running, cycling, and hunting, and backcountry performance. Those are kind of my wheelhouse areas. Happy to help you. Happy to work with you. Love you. Okay, so we're in the glory of summer. It's mid-July, mid to late July, July 21st today, and summer's just an amazing season. I've really tried to grow over the years to appreciate every season. I think there was a time in my life when I was more enamored with winter and not so much with summer. And whereas now I find myself not loving winter as much as I used to, but I'm also trying to rework that so that I'm in my element in every season. And I think some of that goes back to the ancestral living principles that we often talk about here, just getting the circadian rhythm right in the nutrition and the activity patterns. And that's part of the seasonality model, which that I've developed. And you can look that up, just type in seasonality in the search bar on the website. But that's also what we do with the tribe. And I think that's got me digging summer so much. And here's the big thing. In the summertime, the Training Tribe gets several workouts programmed to be outdoors. We typically will have a workout that's based in a park or playground or field, one that's in or at a track facility, and then also one that's consistently at some outdoor venue like a trailhead, or it could even be a swimming pool, but a lake, a river, that kind of thing. That's what happens. And we also, you know, support that with some bonus things, some competition, some home gym workouts, and what have you. I mean, we spend the winter mostly in the gym doing things. And so when we get this opportunity in summer to get outside and get the vitamin D and oxygen and all the things that exist, the grounding effects, by all means, that's what we try to do. Well, For our local peeps, we've got some tribe members who live near me, as well as some of those who are around the country. Sorry for stammering there. We do get together a couple times a week for those things. And just yesterday evening, we were out doing a workout that's also a popular one. It's a regular one that's happened over the last few summers with our group. It's the Roaster Run and River Plunge. Some variant of that. And generally what we do is we go to a place where we park at a fishing access on one of the local rivers, and then there's a paved path that we walk, jog, or run on. And we have the workout's fairly basic. It's 20 minutes out and bring it back under 20 if you can. And so that's kind of a typical evening's adventure. Jogging last night, we're in our speed blocks. We're doing a lot of like speed training and high intensity, but we're just getting into a deload and backing off a little bit. So this was more a restorative or recovery event, so not truly a thing about speed. So there was a jog, for 20 minutes out and about 18:50 coming back. Great fun. It was hot. It was over 90 degrees. And that's awesome because we were getting those heat shock proteins and also having, just a wonderful aerobic saturation or nourishment of the body. But then ultimately we got back, and mosquitoes are pretty bad this time of year. We've had a wet year leading up to this, so we dashed for whatever items we wanted and then made a mad dash through the brush to get to the river, where we plunged into a swimming hole and took a few drifts down through a riffle. That was awesome. And then, as often is the case, Mighty Buck brings his grill, and I had marinated some venison kebabs, and we grilled those up and had just a nice evening. And the point here would be that, you know, fitness, fun, fellowship all go together. But I was talking specifically about capturing the glory of the summer evening. And yeah, sure, occasionally, you know, we'll eat on the porch and do all that. But a lot of times, just to be honest, when it gets into the evening, I probably am going to be sitting on the couch, reading, writing, watching television, something like that. I mean, isn't that what we do as Americans? Every once in a while, I might go out in the garage and tinker on a project, but my garage is really hot in the summer, so that's just less attractive to me. So anyway, what happens with these groups is we get out there, and the summer evening, when it begins to cool, and let's say the wildlife starts to be more active, whether that's birds or anything else, and the light changes. It's so nice to do that. It's actually good for our human health from a biological or ancestral perspective. But I probably would do less of it if I didn't have this social commitment where I knew some people were coming and sort of counting on me to show, and I'm counting on them. And that's great. So my message to you is, even if you're a morning exerciser or you do it at lunchtime, every once in a while, go out and do something in the evening. Doesn't have to be high intensity, but take that walk, do, you know, whatever it can be, a nice easy bike ride. And don't let these summer evenings get away from you. It's a part of our wiring, our genetics, and it's so enjoyable and so beneficial. Got a bunch of coaching clients right now. I'm getting some really amazing results. I'm happy with that. In fact, I've had some challenging cases, yes. And maybe a few minor stumbles here and there, but no failures, you know, and everything is, it's got me feeling very exuberant for what I'm seeing happen. Had a guy who, wanted to do a lot of running and just had a chronic knee problem that just couldn't get rid of. And he'd gone to multiple professionals, and, you know, he'd had medications and injections and consults with surgeons and worked with various therapists and trainers, just not quite getting rid of the problem. And so he tasked me with this assignment. Really, it was an opportunity to just problem solve, movement problem solve. And we looked at him from all sorts of perspective, uncovered some underlying asymmetries and deficiencies, not major, but subtle, that we were able to tweak and basically get him pain-free and avoid any type of more aggressive intervention. And he's been out doing the things he loves to do. Another guy, it's with backpacking. And I see a lot of people with either, like, say, they're through hikers, or they just love backpacking, or they're hunters, and they're out in the backcountry wearing packs. And so much with pack Backpack training involves gradually increasing weight, good fitting packs, actually not using more weight than you have to. So the ultralight approach is very good in some cases. Of course, that doesn't work so much for hunters when, you know, you've got to carry, meat, dead weight, heavy packs. So we want to train for those kind of things. I see a lot of issues in the back, the spine, the neck, the rib cage area where just something's not quite right. And it's oftentimes treatable with some very specific exercises and then some other recommendations. Saw that happen with the guy. I think I mentioned earlier, I've had a few folks with foot issues, you know, whether that's been gout or ankle sprains or plantar fasciitis or some other various diagnostic terms, but that's some issues with feet. And some of that involves helping a person, through some very specific exercise progressions and training modifications, footwear and orthotics sometimes. But also, it gets back to, again, figuring out if their body is distributing load ideally. So I've had some fun working with some folks like that. A couple people in the whole let's attack sarcopenia, let's prevent it, or let's at least minimize its progression. So sarcopenia, the loss of muscle mass, particularly associated with advancing age, and we understand now so much better from the literature the importance of resistance training, and in increasing bone density, muscle mass, hypertrophy types of things, we know that we've got to get to or very near momentary muscular failure. Some in the training, we can do that with heavy weight when it's indicated or appropriate for a person that does develop strength to the highest level. But we can also use as little as 30% of a 1 RM max and do high rep sets. Also, you can include blood flow restriction training in there. So I've kind of been messing around with that with some folks, helping them to kind of restore and maintain their functional vitality from a muscular perspective and supporting that with the protein intake. Again, have very strong data that protein that's animal sourced up to as much as 1 gram per pound of body weight per day, particularly true for an older athletic individual trying to gain or maintain muscle mass. Man, that is the sauce. It's the ticket. It works. And I've had some folks who either weren't doing the training right. They were training oftentimes just too easily. They weren't getting gains, and then others who were maybe doing the training correctly but weren't supplying the protein that the body needed. And so much to think about there, talk about, but probably my two greatest things that have happened recently. One of my athletes who is a triathlete, he's hard training, he's actually training for nationals this year, went through a flat spell, and that happens. You know, sometimes you've got life. Yeah, you've got training, you're trying to balance those things, get the right mixology so that you can get enough stimulus but not break down the process. But he kind of went through a flat stage where, no energy. His statements were like, the batteries aren't recharging, just have this fatigue thing. And so we didn't actually get a blood test, but I thought, well, there's a chance you could have some anemia. So sometimes in older males, we have the opposite issue, going on with, let's say, iron over accumulation or hemochromatosis. Well, that can be true. There's some genetic drivers for that as well, but it also can exist, especially in these endurance athletes where, and particularly the runners where they're pounding, they actually get some lysis of the erythrocytes because they're basically smashing them in their foot every time it hits the ground. No kidding. This has actually been proven by research. And also that just that whole chronic training can have a depleting effect on those red blood cells, thus the oxygen carrying capacity. And so I was like, I think we've made some training adjustments. We've backed off intensity, backed off volume, looked at sleep, trying to drive all those things. But I was like, nutrition, we've got to address that. So I said, hey, it seems like you get most of your protein from chicken and fish. How about a steak? Wasn't opposed to it. Felt a little better. Not good enough, though. I said, okay, it's time for liver. And I think I used to be a bigger liver pusher than I am right now, because the fact is liver's not it's not the most delicious thing in the world. It's probably one of the most nutritious things. Yes, not the most delicious. And so I've, you know, I just don't force people. I'm never going to win anyway, you know, trying to make everyone become a liver eater. But every once in a while, a small serving of liver. And there are some people that say that should be more frequent than I'm saying, but, you know, once or twice a month, I see that happening, or I see that having a great effect for folks. Well, he had a liver dinner, woke up today, this morning, felt zippy, snappy, fresh, and rested, and had that experience carry through a workout. It was a run. He says his legs were light and energetic, and, you know, it could, again, could be many other things, but I love it when we get a result, even if we're not always sure exactly what we did, what it was that we did that made that happen. But the biggest shout out, I think, today should go to Viper, the mighty Viper. He gets featured on Instagram sometimes. He's a local member of our training tribe, and a guy who, you know, has always been relatively fit and healthy and all of that business, but he just got on a big crusade over the past year, tightening up his nutrition, largely just removing the seed oils and the processed foods and the sugars, and has been eating a lot of animal products, you know, meat, eggs, some organs, lots of fruit. And okay, so he's ripped, he's shredded, he's jacked, he's fit, he's not injured. He used to have some chronic injury problems. He said these have gone away, and the only thing I've changed is my diet. Fascinating. When he comes to the workouts, he usually is a leader and a smasher, but then he says, I feel like I could do it again the next day. I'm recovering at least twice as fast as I used to. And wow, thanks, Viper. Thank you for showing us the way and what's possible. You know, N equals one is always an interesting topic, but he's not alone in this. And we've got several other folks who are maybe to a less enthusiastic degree doing what he's doing and seeing results. Old John Boy here, Daddy Lightning included. So thanks again to you, Vipe. All right. I just recently talked on the pod about this topic, aging gracefully and aging athletically. In fact, that was a little article that I put out on the Lifetime Athlete blog, as well as this podcast, just because it's a topic that's near and dear to me. It's cornerstone content for us here at the Lifetime Athlete. That would be obvious. Well, a listener of this show was intrigued by all of that, and so he ended up booking a session or a coaching consultation with me, just like I was talking about at the beginning. And, you know, we got into our Zoom meeting, and I have a little studio where I've got some different lighting and microphones to make the user experience really good for the person on the other end, and the whiteboard came out. I loves me some whiteboard, and so I ended up fleshing it out. I've got all these colored pens, and if I take my time, my writing's semi-legible, so that's what I ended up doing, and we had a great session. He got some ideas and things to move forward with in aging athletically, which was our goal, but also I was looking at that whiteboard. I was inspired to put up a video on the Lifetime Athlete YouTube channel about that. And so it goes through much of what I've been talking about, but specifically how I tailored it to talk to this person regarding these topics. And I've got two key points that I want to share. I went to the Our World in Data website, and there's a ton of amazing graphs there, and basically looking at statistics that they derive from research. And there was a graph comparing longevity, age of life or length of life, versus healthcare expenditure per capita across multiple countries. And so this was just one of, again, many graphs that they had available. But I ended up screenshotting it and putting it on the YouTube video with credit. But what was so pronounced about that is just speaking generally here, if you look at Europe versus USA, and in the context of this graph, in Europe, people live to an average age of about 84, and they spend about $4,000 per capita across most of these countries on healthcare to do so. In the U.S., we're closer to 78, spending $10,000 and up, so we're more than double the cost to actually have people live less long. And bummer. You know, it's what we have. We have this amazing medical system that can intervene and grab people around, let's say, age 55 or 60 and prop them up so that they can live another two decades or so. But I don't know that that's the highest quality of life that we're creating. We're just keeping people alive. And so I'm asking myself, well, why? Why is that? What's the big deal with most of these countries? And there were actually a few other ones as well from South America and Asia. But when I look at this, I see several things. First of all, people in those countries typically move more. They might not necessarily train more. We have a very dedicated exercise habit in this subset of our population here. But the gen pop, the average, well, in a lot of those countries, people are just more ingrained towards being pedestrians. They walk around, they walk to get their groceries, they ride their bike. They're just being more active. And that general daily activity relates to the step counts. Helps us. We all need that. Also, when you look at most of these other countries and you examine their food supply, they actually have access to less processed food. They tend to eat less of it, tend to cook more, or the processed food's exceedingly expensive. All of those things lead to a lower amount of consumption of, let's say, junk and fast food. Although these things are changing, that that factor or that impact is still present. So they're moving more, they're eating less processed food, but there's also a slightly different, again, it'll vary from place to place, of course, but a different cultural view of work and of stress. And so this whole management of stress, like, you know, we tend to get, hyper-facilitated and into overdrive and, you know, we worry and fret and rush and all these things happen. And then we seek medication and intervention for it, where they have a much, different model. A lot of these countries, how they view things, stress doesn't escalate as much in the first place, and then they tend to manage it more holistically. So again, that's really an important point, because anytime we're thinking about lifetime humans, beings or beasts, you know, we want to have that health first model, and this is certainly good evidence towards that. The other thing, though, the key point I was talking to this guy about, and it's on the whiteboard in that video, is slow fitness. And so what I would say about slow fitness is, first of all, well, what is slow fitness? Well, it's your aerobic training, your cardio. That's what we do for cardiorespiratory health and endurance. So you've got cardio, you've got strength, resistance training, you've got mobility, stretching, yoga, etc. So when you look at those things, they're all slow fitness. We typically move slowly. Now, that's not bad. It's actually good. We benefit from all those things, but it's not good enough, because we're not training. If we only do those things, really three of the big five components, and that's agility, speed, and power. So agility, it's interesting when I talked about that first, because agility is this interesting thing about being a movement smith and being an optimal mover. So you own position and you have competency or mastery of movement in every direction from those positions. Well, that does require mobility, which is essentially flexibility or range of motion, or just the ability to access that. Well, we want mobility, but we also want stability. Sometimes when we don't want to be mobile everywhere, we need to be stable or stabilized so that we can create the right movement where we want it to happen. We have reactivity, which is being able to react to, let's say, opponents or the environment or different things. Life is not static. And then we also have this fluidity or suppleness, the artful, graceful, poetic nature that good movers exhibit. So we need to train that in our training patterns, you know, just working on, you know, multi-directional and positional movement and speed, and doing so so smoothly. We've also got power, and, you know, power is that kind of, let's say, mix on the force velocity continuum or force velocity curve, where, you know, we're able to apply force over time or distance. And that's really important, because it's an expression of athleticism, but it's also an indicator of injury risk. People with low power tend to have more injuries. And then finally, the fountain of youth is speed. You know, we're made to go fast. And if we optimize our central nervous system and our type 2 muscle fibers, the fast twitch muscle fibers, which atrophy if we don't train them, well, then we have speed and we tend to not lose it as much. So that's super important. So we talked about that. You know, move more, eat less garbage, and manage stress, optimize it. But then also do your slow fitness, but also do agility, speed, and power. A powerful message that resonates with me every day. Okay, now we've got motivation. It's coming up, and I see this a lot. For 40 years, I've worked with people in all these different capacities, and so I can tell you this. Kindness and love, while they are important in our relationships and in our interactions, those things don't work very well in motivating people to change, to train, to get healthy, to lose weight. Again, this subset right here, the lifetime athletes, maybe we have goals and that drives us. Great. But for a lot of people, just telling them, hey, look, you're welcome to join the training tribe, for example, or hey, we care about you. We want you to do this. You know that this is good for you, whatever this is, you know, whether that's some form of exercise or nutrition or whatever. That doesn't get people to do it. What motivates people, the true motivators, are pain, fear, and anger. I mean, it's just the way it is. So pain speaks for itself. When you're in pain, you want to get out of pain, and it becomes top shelf priority. The body puts that first, full stop. Well, then we go to being scared or pissed off. It tends to drive behavior. So if you've got some inner boiling rage or frightful situation, it's gonna involve your sympathetic nervous system, and you're going to address that. Now, long term, that's not really, I think, a good thing. The secret is to find a way to initiate change, maybe again by harnessing fear or rage, but ultimately then to find the joy in what you're doing and find that consistency. And quote Jocko, I think I did it the other day, discipline is freedom. So why I brought this up is just I just come across this a lot, not really with the people that are in the tribe or that I'm coaching, but people that are curious, and they'll talk about things, and they usually will start as soon as they ask me a question. I tell them a little bit about what we do. They'll have an "I can't," "I don't," "I won't" statement, and of course I always have an "I can't hear that because I don't talk that way here." # find a way. # create the win. # there's always a friggin' way, and that's really important to me. So I'm actually playing some mind games with some of these folks and, you know, trying to scare them a little or piss them off, because I think that's more likely to get them to make a change that's good for them, even if it ends up alienating me in the process, which a lot of times it doesn't, because as you get to know me, you can overlook a lot of my BS talk and just basically know that I'm really sincere at the heartfelt level. But it's an interesting game. It's a dance that we do, and there's been books written on how to communicate and also motivate, whether that's trying to help another person to do that or doing it to yourself. So moving along now, the title of today's show is The Case of the Disappearing Buttock. And so this this is not uncommon. And I'm gonna give you the story, and then I'll give you the actual science behind it. So a friend of mine reached out to me just recently, and basically he's just like, "Where's my ass? Where in the hell has my ass gone?" And I'm like, "Hey, what you talking about?" He's like, "Well, I've lost my ass." And I said, "Well, did it go out for lunch or something like that?" And he's like, "Yeah, smart ass. Okay, couldn't resist that one." But he's like, "No, my butt's gone." And I said, "Well, that's a condition known as gluteal muscle atrophy, or what I like to call gluteal insufficiency." So I'll use that term sometimes. I think it just speaks to how I see it. Well, the glutes, it's a gluteus minimus, medius, and maximus in each butt cheek, and there's also 6 external rotators. So you got 9 major muscles in each cheek. They do a lot for us, but when they become insufficient, or in other words, atrophied, those muscles are wasting away from not being used or trained adequately, we see a loss of the buttock profile. We a flat butt, and that's actually no bueno. So these muscles, they are the most powerful muscles in the body. In the butcher shop, that's the home of the round steak and the rump roast. But, you know, in the human, unless you're a cannibal, it's essentially how we get our greatest propulsive force, how it really helps us to manage position and get up and down and lift and carry things and stand and stabilize on one leg, jumping, landing. The glutes are king. And so recently I've been watching the World Championships of track and field, and it's really an interesting thing because you look at the athletes and they all have, you know, well-developed glutes, buttocks, even in the, like the really slim distance runners at the elite level, because they're doing the type of training that develops, they still have kind of a well-developed buttock. And some people say, oh, it's disproportionately large. I'm saying, no, that's actually how it's supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to rock a badonkadonk. And if you've got a flat one, that is a real problem. So how this atrophy happens is the man takes it from us, or we let the man take it from us. So if you sit a lot, you drive a lot, and you don't do the kind of training I was talking about before that relates to not just strength, but agility, speed, and power, well, the buttock disappears. And I even had a guy a long time ago I worked with. I didn't work successfully with this guy. We argued a lot. And he was a real skinny dude, kind of a manorexic marathoner, emaciated fellow, and he was actually proud of his lack of buttock, but he was very functionally limited, could barely get around other than just jogging a straight line. And I called him on it, and he was like, "Well, it's really cool. It's fashionable. It's a sign of health." I said, "No, it's not. And, you know, you're totally mistaken. You know, you got to jack up that ass." But he didn't do it. So that's why this atrophy happens. It's a disuse issue, and that's true of any, you know, muscle or any capacity. You know, don't use it, you lose it. And so, well, we can address that. You know, all you really got to do is a little bit of something. You know, so it's doing lunges or squats and step ups. You know, the for example, those are good. Hiking in the hills, wearing heavy packs, maybe sometimes. Doing some jumping and landing and sprinting and plyometrics where it's appropriate and scaled to your level. Well, that's you don't need to do much, but you need to do that to keep this buttock viable. And it actually, if I talked about sarcopenia before, well, that's one of the areas where I see the loss pretty rapidly. And it actually happens to everyone. You don't see it in the females as much as the males, because the female body is designed in such a way that, you know, there are more curves, let's just say, and the body comp's a little different. So you don't see this gluteal wasting. And maybe until it's progressed to a very late stage. In the guys, you know, you'll see it pretty quickly because most guys are relatively lean in the backside, not all, but most. And then when they start to lose mass, they'll notice, they'll either see it in a profile or they'll notice the pants fitting differently. So, you know, very important to try to do some of these things. And, you know, you really do want to have two halves of bowling balls back there. And, you know, if you clinch them, they should be pretty rock hard. And, that's easily accomplished by, you know, any type of, you know, athletic training model, you know, like we use in our annual training plan or long-term athletic development model with the Training Tribe. But I also have a video for that. This is an older video. It's a number of years old. It was back before we rebranded to the Lifetime Athlete. It was when we were the Lifetime Body. You know, make your body last a lifetime. It's called Operation Booty Jack. Now, that sounds kind of funny, but it's actually a pretty good program. It's a 10-minute video. And I think there's also an article that you can search in the search bar at thelifetimeathlete.com. But nonetheless, you can figure out exactly how to develop the buttock muscles. I go through 6 specific exercises. You'll have a fitness model working with me to demonstrate how to perform these things and also give you a suggested protocol. Works really well. Operation Booty Jack. And it's almost humorous, but really the whole case of the disappearing buttock, it's actually common and it's kind of serious. So we want to think about that, I encourage you to do so. And if you're not satisfied with where you're at, you can do something about it. I can even help you more further if you'd like. So what I'd like to do in finishing up this relatively brief podcast today is just invite you to connect with me. Tribe members, I know that you guys do that so often, but you know, we have our forum, the T2 forum. And if you have anything that you just think is an interesting comment or question, hey, I'll entertain it. I'll also entertain it in our weekly masterclass, where we're doing either a guided workout or problem solving let's say pain resolution or training or nutrition, or even just taking Q&A, bring that please to the masterclass as a tribe member. You know, I'm here for you. And then also we get those daily motivational emails that you get from me. Reply back. I'm happy to respond to those. Yeah, I'm here for you. That's what I do. Fit for the field participants. So if you're a hunter, a backcountry enthusiast, a mountain athlete, and you're using the Fit for the Field program this summer, as you know, you are receiving free complimentary email coaching for the summer from me. So take advantage of that. Again, I love talking about these topics, and I learn as well every time I'm doing it, so I appreciate you helping me with that. Also, just as a listener of the pod, you can email me anytime through the contact at the Lifetime Athlete. By all means, direct message me on Instagram at the Lifetime Athlete and check out some of that content. Maybe follow me if you like. It's fun stuff. You know, I mostly put up things about training, but I'm also inspired by nature, and you know, there'll be some things of that nature in there. Or just drop me a comment in one of the YouTube videos. I do respond to those as well. So let me know, however it works best for you, what you'd like to hear on the show or how I can help you with your own journey. Hey, thanks as always. And have a fantastic day, week, month, year, and life. Coach Jay-Z signing out from the Lifetime Athlete Podcast.